GBC Big Three podcast, a weekly podcast where we sit down and unpack three big questions raised from our Sunday sermon. I'm your host, Matt Willis, and joining me as co-host is my partner in crime, Jessica Baker. Welcome, Jessica Baker.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you.
How you going, my friend? What's going
good.
On?
Pretty good. Nothing much is going on. Just working, living,
just
Netflixing.
Doing the dream.
Yeah.
Just doing the dream.
Yeah, living the dream.
Well, Jess, today's episode is a little bit different for us, and that is because church was a little bit different for us on Sunday. We launched in our PM service the Discipleship Cycle pilot, where we kind of want to do church a little bit differently to encourage people to kind of sow into their discipleship, not just on a Sunday. You can't compartmentalize that stuff. It needs to kind of be taking place throughout the week. So we went to a dawn service,
yes, you and I did.
With a whole bunch of people down at Cronulla at Sparrow's Fart in the morning. I don't even know what time it was because it was
disgusting, dark
and disgusting. And then we had breakfast afterwards, and then church was all about having a discussion around, I guess, how we, from a position of faith, interact with kind of the cultural reverence that comes from something like Anzac Day. Mm. It was all a little bit different.
It was very different.
What were your thoughts? What were your reflections coming out of the discipleship cycle?
I really loved the day in as a whole. I think like the different kind of shaken up church service was really good, but the fact that it allowed us to all go to a dawn service together, and then, you know, Logan and a few of the other boys organized like breakfast for us, so we all had a big cook up and like
them.
I just think done, like community fixed. But the actual service, look, there's nothing I find more terrifying than sitting around a circle discussing things, but actually it was pretty good.
We were on the same table. Yeah. What are you talking about?
No, and you had some good points.
Okay, thanks.
I think it was a really good way of being like, hey, I don't know some people, so let's sit down and chat. Like,
yeah.
It gives you things to talk about, and then I think it's a really good idea that, you know, someone's new, they're sitting on a table automatically, so you already have like five or six people that you can talk to after the service. Or, I really liked it.
I feel like a round table is slightly less intimidating than an entire auditorium full of people.
Mm.
Well, I don't know. Maybe. Well, I'm a raging extrovert. For me, I'm just like, gimme.
For the introverts in the room, a little stressy, but I'm here to tell you it's not as bad as you think it's going to be. Actually, good.
I also really loved just the practical nature of it, like just the fact that we weren't just sitting there being fed, as wonderful as that is, but it was this, you kind of received and then had to implement it right then and there. You had to really engage with what Raider was saying. For those of you who weren't there, Raider kind of did a bit of a TED Talk-esque kind of vibe just around his reflections on Anzac Day and what it represents. And then, we just kind of got thrown into these discussions to kind of figure that out straight off the bat. It wasn't a, I'm just going to sit and listen and maybe think about it. We were kind of, the rubber hit the road really quickly.
Yeah, that's right. Because that's not necessarily something I would ever sit down and think about.
No.
So I'm excited about what's to come in that, like, you actually have to sit and chat and unpack things.
Yeah.
My only feedback for next week is one bowl of lollies just wasn't enough for our table.
Ooh, it's true. I hoed in pretty hard.
I noticed around the room other bowls were full of lollies.
I know.
Do some people just not like them?
Well, I did change tables at one point to finish off their bowl.
I did go around and scavenge a few. Yeah, I'm not going to lie.
I think that's the best life. Well, obviously now part of the cycle is we'll be kind of having our church service kind of as per usual this Sunday with worship and a sermon, but we want to be kind of sharing those stories about how what we started last Sunday kind of impacted our week coming into this Sunday. So it's going to be, I'm pumped for the discipleship cycle.
Definitely.
But as I said, it means that the Big Three podcast is a bit different. For those of you who are longtime listeners, the faithful few, you would know that every now and then we do a fourth question. A question that is kind of too big to just be one of the big three. It kind of needs an entire podcast. And we felt like on the kickoff weeks of the discipleship cycle, where we kind of focus in on one idea, we will do the same with the Big Three podcast. So today we've got the fourth question coming out of our discussion on Anzac Day and how to be cultural agents, as Mark spoke about on Sunday. How do we kind of approach and view the things in our culture from a Christian viewpoint. So before we get into the ominous fourth question, ooh, what will it be? Ooh, intrigue, suspense. We are missing one critical element of the big three, and that's Mark Rader himself. Welcome, Mark Rader.
Thanks, Matt. Hi, Jess.
Always comes in so enthusiastic. Yes, thank you.
Welcome.
It's good to be here.
Just trying to bring balance to the emotional stability of the room.
I feel like you went to a dawn service this morning. Yeah. Like, geez, wake up a bit, mate. Like, it's okay.
Family starts moving fairly early.
So yeah, fair enough.
It is a little bit dawn service-y.
I mean, you're speaking to a shift worker and a father of three young children.
Yep.
So you're not going to get much sympathy from us.
I wasn't looking for sympathy. I was just, you know, trying to roll with it.
Just keeping it real. I appreciate that. Well, Mark, what was the biggest thing that kind of stood out for you during Anzac Day this past Sunday?
In terms of the discipleship cycle or Anzac Day as a whole?
Mate, I'm just giving you free rein. You know, you do you.
Well, I'll do a little bit of both.
Okay, of course you will.
Listen, I thought that like the discipleship cycle, you know, for the first week, I was like, oh, that worked well.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what I expected, but it was like, I guess that was sort of it, I guess. You know, there's some things that I think we learned, you know, apart from having more lollies on certain tables. I
mean, very important.
Important feedback, yes.
But, you know, good engagement and good conversation and all that kind of stuff. So I was pretty pleased with it. I'm interested to see how people will feel, you know, like doing church differently once is fine. But, you know, once we're kind of, say, four cycles in, will it still feel as fresh, or will it be like, oh, this is really weird? So I'm interested to see how I feel about that and how other people engage with that. Anzac Day, it's the first time I've ever gotten up for a dawn service. Mm-hmm. So like I watched it on the ABC. I was preaching twice in the morning, so I thought I'm not going to make my day more hectic than it needs to be. So I got up to watch that. And it's interesting. I was just interesting, partially because I think I'm an outsider to it.
Yeah.
You know, I was struck by it was the one in Canberra.
Yeah.
Which may have played a part in it. But I was struck by the fact that the three main presenters were middle-aged white men. I just found that really kind of intriguing.
Yeah.
I'm not sure there's anything to do with Anzac Day per se. And again, I think there were some significant reasons. The Prime Minister was one of the speakers. And so it's kind of not a gendered decision. It's a positional decision. But at any rate, so that was kind of interesting. I was struck by the... I was struck by how the Anzac legend and the values are applied to all Australians in any situation.
Yeah.
You know, so the Prime Minister focused on, you know, kind of 2020 and, you know, the uncertainty and fear and anxiety that we faced as a nation, and kind of drew the parallel of we faced it with the same kind of spirit.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, did we really? I thought there was just a lot of whinging about.
Yeah, I felt really uncomfortable when they made a parallel between like Anzac Day and COVID. I was like, oh, and also we were like punching each other in the shops for toilet paper.
Not sure.
Yeah, but it was like so really interesting how it was kind of used very aspirationally to kind of, this is who we want to be.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's where, you know, we're probably drifting into the question, so I won't go too far, but I think that's where part of the exegetical work of trying to figure out what's going on here is so important.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you start taking Anzac Day as a military thing, you start talking about mateship, which tends to be a very male word, and quite white.
Yeah.
Then the Anzac spirit that we're looking to see in our response to COVID ends up becoming militaristic, male, and white.
Yeah.
Which means like, so it just kind of perpetuates some of that stuff, which I think is, so like, I was quite fascinated to watch, you know, taking notes as I went. I'm kind of glad I was at home for that sense. I was able to take notes on what was being said where it would have been
I was taking zero notes.
I was taking notes, but I felt eyes because I had my phone out typing away and I was like, people think I'm texting. I'm not.
I'm trying to observe.
I'm observing.
That's right.
I'm not so, part of this.
Yeah. So like it was, I think, you know, Jess, your point, that I think part of the excitement around the start of the discipleship cycle was that it was a whole day of event. Like I hadn't really thought about that, but the fact that so many people, I was really pleased with the number of people who took up the opportunity to go to a dawn service. And, you know, the breakfast was a great idea and just meant that there was a sense that this was a whole day thing preparing for, and people were thinking about it the week before because they had to register and all those sorts of things. So I think in terms of one of our outcomes of pushing discipleship outside of Sunday, I thought that was a valuable start.
Awesome. Well, I think we can officially say it is time to tackle the fourth question. Well, Mark, obviously for us on Sunday, the focus was Anzac Day. I mean, I think it fit nicely, the fact that we had launched the discipleship cycle on Anzac Day. It seemed kind of relevant for us to kind of consider how this day and this legacy and the history of what it represents kind of impacts us from a standpoint of faith. But a lot of your reflection on Sunday night was around, well, how do we take something like Anzac Day? So Anzac Day kind of became the example. How do we take the cultural things in our world and view it from a Christian viewpoint? And you talked about kind of asking those three significant questions, you know, where do we see the greater good? Or the created good, sorry, where do we see the impact of sin and where do we see Jesus in this? And we kind of approached Anzac Day from those three perspectives. But I guess, you know, what came up for a number of people is, okay, so we've kind of done this little exercise around Anzac Day, but obviously there's a skill here that we can then take out into our week, and that's the whole premise of what the discipleship cycle seeks to achieve. So with what we kind of discussed and what you shared on Sunday, how do we practically apply this discussion that we started on Sunday to our daily lives?
How do we apply that conversation? I think the simplest answer, I know that we tend to go longer than this, but we could stop right here, and that is
we won't.
Apply it. Like, apply it.
Okay, so I think you've missed the heart of the question.
Well, I think that, you know, the question is really one of, as you mentioned in the introduction, one of Christian cultural agency, which is a term that I read in a fellow by his last name's Van Hooser in his book Everyday Theology. And he basically talks about what does it mean for Christians to act in their culture, to actually bring about the kingdom or the restoration and renewal of all things. And he talks about a handful of kind of skills that are required in that space. One is theological competence, like we need to know and understand what it is that the Bible says and what we believe and what our doctrine is and all of those sorts of things.
Yeah.
Another then is the whole, what do we actually do in the world? And then the third is having some cultural competence, able to understand our culture.
Yeah.
And what we did on Sunday night was really about that third skill set, about understanding our culture. Because I think one of the, I'm not sure it's a misconception, I think it's something we don't think about, but I believe that we assume, because I think this is my experience, we assume that because I live in my culture, and I know my way around my culture, that I understand my culture. We don't, right? It's kind of like, you know, I can drive my car and get anywhere I need to go in the city, right? I can figure all that out. But do I really know how the roads work? Like, do I know how to build a road? No.
Yeah.
Do I know how my car works? No. But I know how to drive my car. And it's kind of like we say, well, because I know how to drive a car, I know how a car works. No idea. No, I open the hood, it's just, it's a thing,
right? Amen.
You know, I can probably check the oil. There's probably three things I can do. You know, I can hit the battery and hope the car starts. And then, you know, like,
or electrocute myself.
Yeah, I don't even know. Is that possible? So, you know, I think that when we turn to our culture, we sort of assume because we know our way around it, we understand how it works. We get it. You know, phones. We know how to use our phone. Well, some people know how to use phones. I probably should probably put myself in that category. I have a phone. But like, do we really understand the impact of that much technology in our hands on how it's shaped our world and shaped our brains and how it shapes our understanding of things? We never think about it. So I reckon that, you know, to some degree, if you learn the skills or you begin to learn the skills of making sense of your culture, then the best way to apply that is just to apply that, to just practice.
Yeah.
Because unless you're practicing, you're never going to get any better at it, if that makes any sense. So, you know, when it comes to something like Anzac Day, like it was a beautiful kind of match, you know,
yep.
Hey, the Sunday that we're starting is the 25th. That is Anzac Day. Mm. So it's not even, we're not even talking about something that happened on Friday or something that's happening tomorrow. It's today. So it was a good opportunity. And I think for lots of people, it's just something they grew up with.
Yeah.
And they might every so often kind of go, oh, it's weird how it's gotten more popular in the last 10 years or whatever. Mm. But that's probably the extent of it.
Mm.
You know, and so, you know, you were saying on Sunday when we just managed to catch up, I think after the breakfast, you'd said that some people just hadn't known I wouldn't say the basic details about Anzac Day, but like they had learned some things about Anzac Day that they hadn't known.
Yeah, absolutely.
You just kind of go, oh, well, there you go. That's really interesting. You know, and I remember having a similar experience. And it's been a while since I've used a hockey illustration, so I'll do this. Right?
Has it been a while?
Has it been? Well, it's been at least a week. But I remember one of the most significant hockey events in Canada was the 1972 Summit Series with Russia.
What a good time that was.
72. What a year.
Yeah. And Paul Henderson scored the goal that won the series and restored Canadian pride and all this kind of
stuff.
Yeah. And here's the thing about the whole series. So I was 2 years old when it took place. But I know. Neither of you were your parents even born? I won't even ask that.
Hardly just.
All right, that's enough. But I grew up knowing that Paul Henderson had scored the goal. You just knew it.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I had an opportunity, you know, when I was actually in Australia to interview Paul Henderson here, that I actually learned all about the event. I knew nothing about it.
Yeah.
But it had become such a cultural, iconic moment.
Yeah.
Like every Canadian knew about it, whether they liked hockey or not. You just knew. It was like when Australia won the America's Cup. You guys know?
You're talking to two people who don't really engage in sport.
Well, it's as close as I could come because it's like when I talked to many Australians.
Kathy Freeman.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably.
She did a thing.
But like it might be something like that where you kind of go, like you just know that it happened, but you don't necessarily know the context of it or the significance of it. And it was kind of like that, I think, you know, when I was kind of learning about this thing that had just been part of, like I just grew up knowing it, but I didn't actually know it. And I think Anzac Day sits in that boat for lots of people. You just grow up. It happens every year. You know, it's a big deal. You hear about it at school. There's all these things.
Yeah.
But you rarely have the opportunity or we rarely take the opportunity to actually go, okay, so what's actually going on here and make some sense of it. And I reckon that's one of our challenges.
I think that's really interesting because like one of the, you know, we ask people to kind of submit questions on Sunday and one of them was what other cultural things could we apply these questions to of the created good of sin in our world and the role of Jesus. But ultimately what you're saying is, well, everything. But we need to start asking those questions. And I think you're absolutely right. Like what Sunday made evident for me, and I think a lot of people, particularly as we stood in the dawn service and then were able to start hearing other people's reflection during the discussions on Sunday night, was just how little we really knew about it. I mean, I'd seen Mel Gibson's Gallipoli movie, a classic, amazing, and that was pretty much the extent in which I understood Anzac. Like I knew that it was this horrific, you know, loss of life that, you know, as much as, you know, we were fighting Turkey, like the British kind of come out as the enemy a bit as well because they just, you know, they're just perceived as sending the Australians and the New Zealands to slaughter.
Yeah, the arrogant, aristocratic.
Those people.
Yeah.
And even though it seemed like such a folly, really, like let's send an entire, you know, army uphill where the enemy has the higher ground and can just pick us off, yet we kind of honor it with such this reverence. And that was kind of it. And then all of a sudden, you know, I'm being confronted with the really strong Christian tones within the dawn service. And then finding out from you on Sunday night that actually it was the churches that started the dawn service tradition. And I think you're absolutely right. There are all these things that under the surface, we take very superficial understanding of our culture, don't we? And
what happens is our culture interprets things for us, right? So we pick up what our culture wants us to hear from it, right? Now, that may not be a remarkably that might not be driven by a particular agenda, but there's usually an agenda. Sorry, I don't mean that there's no – I don't mean there's not an agenda, but it's – I'm not sure that people even think it through. But for instance, as I was saying at the beginning, how the Anzac spirit is used to kind of this be this aspirational, this is what it looks like to be Australian.
Yeah.
Like that's an interesting use of the Anzac spirit.
Yeah.
Yeah, in no like circumstance, like Australia Day, I just feel a little bit uncomfortable and a little bit like, should we be celebrating this Anzac Day? I'm like, man, I'm so proud to be Australian. It's and then to hear like the undertones of what's kind of going on, I'm like,
And I think that's it. So you've picked up, picked up the cultural message.
Yeah.
You know, it's like as I said, you know, our phones, they tell us things, and our culture interprets this device in a particular way, and that's true of just about everything that happens. You know, like it would be fascinating to consider Netflix as a cultural icon.
Don't. Because I'm too scared that you're going to tell me that it's the devil and I shouldn't watch it.
Well, but
see, I think in my life, Radar.
He's doing it. Don't take it away from me.
I got pitchy pretty quickly. So. Well, but like, because it's those it's the things that we never think about.
Yeah.
It's the things that we never think about that are valuable to consider. And it's a skill that you have to develop. I don't think I'm particularly good at reading culture, but it's something that I've tried to work harder at because I realized, like, I still remember this is maybe 15 years ago now, but we had a conversation as a staff and I can't remember why we had the discussion. It was kind of like an unofficial staff. I mean, it wasn't kind of a morning tea discussion, but it was about how consumerism impacts the church. And we'd had this long conversation and we kind of got to the end of it. And what we'd ended up talking about was like church shopping. And at the end of the conversation, I was like, okay, well, I suppose that is a place where consumerism is evident in the church, I suppose. But I was really uncomfortable with this kind of moment of insight where I kind of went, I'm pretty sure that I am also influenced by consumerism and I'm not a church shopper.
Yeah.
Like I'm pretty committed here. So how does consumerism influence me? How does it influence the committed? And I sat there thinking to myself, I have no idea. And I thought, that's a problem.
Yeah.
You know, this massive ism, and I can't figure out any way that it might impact me at all. And I thought, oh, that can't be right. And so since that time, I've kind of been on a bit of a journey of trying to figure out how to do this. And I just realized we tend not to teach people the skills to do it.
Yeah. Right?
Like if you go to Bible college, and we'll teach you how to read the Bible well.
Yeah.
Which is more than just being able to read, right? You have to be able to understand context and, you know, original languages. And like we teach you the skills. And then over time, if you practice those skills, you get fairly comfortable with exegeting a passage of scripture. And so like my experience has been like, you know, you give me a passage of scripture and enough time, I can exegete it for you. Yeah. I have the skills to do it and I practiced it a bit. Cultural exegesis. I don't know what to do. Like it's just some really big thing. So I think practicing with small things is really helpful.
Yeah.
You know, there's enough ads everywhere now that just watch an ad and watch it. Like what are the claims that it's making?
Yeah.
You know, what are the claims that it's making? Is there evidence of the created good? Is there evidence of the brokenness in our world?
Yeah.
What's the future that it promises us? Right. And just that alone can be really instructive.
Yeah.
I remember at one point kind of going through this and I might've been teaching a class on this, but anyway, I was watching television and there was a BMW ad, I think it was, and they had a peace of mind guarantee. And I remember sitting there thinking to myself, you can't do that. Right? Like just kind of going, I can't believe I just heard you say that you guarantee my peace of mind if I buy a BMW. As if my peace of mind is all wrapped around a car.
I feel like I'd be more stressed that I was going to scratch it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. It'd be more anxiety.
Or like the loan that I now have because of making the repayment on the BMW.
But boy, it's smooth on the road. Oh. Yeah.
But it was just kind of one of those things about recognizing a promise that they're making or a claim that they're making, which is really a faith claim.
Yeah.
Now, again, I doubt that the BMW marketing team were like, hey, let's sneak in a really nasty kind of faith claim and see if we can't nick all the Christians. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't like, it was just, this is, you know, at any rate, but I was really struck by those claims. Mm. And so, and that's quite common, you know, shampoo ads, like the things they claim and promise are remarkable. You know, use the shampoo, man, you just got personality, character, and
confidence.
It just shines through. I'm like, I've never felt that way after shit.
You've never like just shake your head around.
Even when I had long hair as a younger man, I never kind of felt like the right shampoo just unlocked my confidence.
I've seen photos of you with longer hair. Mm. I'm not sure if you use shampoo.
I was a young man.
But on that, so like, and like just to change tracks just a little bit, but like, again, this is one of the reflections that came up on Sunday to bring us back to the BMW.
Yep.
As offended as you are by that ad, it seems, I can just picture you, you know, on the couch with your cuppa, just like flipping a table, just
you
like
heretics.
But like, obviously we can look at things within our culture, and let's call it the BMW ad. And, and we asked those three questions that you got us to ask of Anzac Day. Yep. You know, where do you see the creator good, sin, and Jesus in this? Now, obviously in that peace of mind, okay, well, there's like peace of mind separate from it being associated with a BMW. Like, mm-hmm. peace of mind is, I would imagine, the created good. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of where God had created the world to be before sin kind of, you know, ruined it all. But just because we can point out the good in a situation, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's good, obviously, because, you know, you're flipping a table about a BMW ad.
Okay, you're saying I was flipping it. I just remember being a little bit surprised.
With actual fact that
right, okay.
he threw the cuppa across the room. Anyway, but like, so how do we, like, what do we do with that? Because ultimately this approach mm-hmm. means that we're going to try and identify the mm-hmm. created good in everything. And, you know, how do we then, like, what's the relationship between those three questions, and how do we navigate that? Because that can obviously, get tricky.
Yeah. Well, I think, I kind of alluded to on Sunday night, I think it's important in the Christian worldview to start with the created good, because that's where our story begins and ends.
Yeah.
Right? God created the world and it was very good, and Jesus is restoring the world and it will be very good. So it's helpful for us to kind of recognize what elements here just reflect part of what that good was and will be, which then helps moderate our stance on something in terms of when we identify the brokenness of something. Mm. It allows us to affirm particular things in culture, which I think will often surprise people who aren't people of faith. Like, they're like, oh, you think there's anything valuable in that? You're like, yeah, this is really interesting, or that's really good, or there's something really valuable about X, Y, or Z. Mm. You know, even something like Anzac Day. You know, where you can say, oh, there's some really good things here. Some of those values are certainly valuable and useful and seen in Christ and all those sorts of things. So I think it moderates our response, so we're not just kind of automatically jumping to judgment.
Judgy people.
Yeah. And I think it's like, I found it really helpful because I think I tend to see you see the discrepancies like, oh, see, that's just no good.
Mm.
And actually to say, okay, fine, that there may be a problem with the claim that the BMW company has made about, you know, the ability of their car to completely revolutionize my life. However, however, there is evidence of the created good in that.
Mm.
Whether it be the enjoyment of new things.
Yeah.
Like, I think Adam and Eve would have been delighted in the garden and everything they explored and experienced.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, the search for contentment and peace is really important. And there's something about lovely things. Like, we've been created to enjoy and appreciate lovely things. Mm. Like, God didn't make us with eyes that just saw black and white, or with ears that just kind of hear a very small range of sounds, or with a tongue that could taste kind of just two things. Like, we are designed to experience beauty. You know, there's something lovely about the feel of silk or the sound of beautiful music or, you know, like, we're designed for beautiful things. And so, okay, I'm not convinced the BMW is necessarily beautiful, but there's something about the luxurious
component. I don't know. I feel like you just sold it to me. Sign me up.
All right. Then there's a second question.
Yeah.
But then you have to ask yourself, okay, so what's the brokenness in this, right? Well, you know, there's a BMW. Someone's driving it all by themselves. Oh, that's interesting. So with no family. So they're saying that peace of mind is all about being by myself in the car. There's no evidence of family because the car is always spotless.
You know, Amen.
Like, yeah, seriously, you're definitely on your own. You have very little in your life because all you do is clean your car. Because cars don't look like that for very long. No. You know, there's the claim about peace of mind. You're like, peace of mind is broader than having a good warranty on a nice car. Yeah. I mean, okay, maybe, but you know, how we unpack all of that stuff, I think needs to be explored. I think in ads in particular, it's helpful to look for the claims of the good life.
Yeah.
Like, what does it say about the good life? Which is kind of a secondary kind of question. You often find that in television shows as well. Like, reality TV, what's the promise of the good life? What's the claim that they're making about the good life? What does it say about what life should be like? Mm. And so I think there are a handful of other questions. Like, those three questions aren't the only questions to ask. But and then I think, you know, and then asking the question of, so, you know, what difference does Jesus make? If this were to be translated into heaven, what would it, like, you take the BMW ad, will there be BMWs in heaven? And I'm like,
you my know, husband just, really hopes so.
Yeah, and I'm like, and to some degree, the importance is not to try to figure out whether there's a theological warrant for BMWs in heaven, as much as it is to say, so what parts of that picture would then be changed and transformed? Right? Well, there'd probably be a bunch of people in the car,
yeah,
to start with. And you know, that alone would be fairly interesting. There'd be a sense of gratitude, because it's not the car that brings peace of mind, but it's God that brings peace of mind. Like, there's just a few things where you kind of go, okay, so that's where that gets changed. So then it changes the way we think about car ads, to kind of go, okay, a car is maybe a very beautiful thing.
Yeah.
That can bring a lot of contentment and can bring some joy. Fine. However, our peace of mind is found in God. Our contentment's found in God. Our satisfaction ought to be found in God. Those sorts of things, I think, are where we need to just start kind of recognizing, you know, what we're doing and what we're hearing. You know, like, so often we hear that, you know, like, a really simple distinction is between a need and a want. So often we say, oh, I need a new pair of shoes, or I need a new shirt, or whatever the case might be. And I'm not sure that that's necessarily always accurate. Sometimes it is, you know, like,
I don't have a pair of pants that isn't torn at the moment. So I think it's fair to say I need some jeans. Yeah.
But
I need
thinking some jeans, about guys. That is a good question, right? Because I think we can often just pass off our wants as needs. And that subtle difference, because I don't think we're making a particular, I don't think we're like trying to hide it from people. You know, I need a new pair of shoes, and then kind of looking around to see if anyone kind of
calls
us out on that. Yeah, you have more than one, you know, like, but at the same time, I think we just, if we're not careful, that can just become the way we talk about things, and language matters. You
know? But again, I think that's the reflection of the language of our world. Like, and you know, you talk about advertisement being a good place to start to kind of practice this cultural agency. And a lot of the assumed, I think, perspectives and values and ideas that we just kind of own as being normal comes from media and advertisement, because we're flooded with it. It's on our TV, it's on the bus, it's, you know, on billboards, it's on our phones, it's everywhere. And it's always tailored to the things that we want because, you know, they're listening and the phones are listening. And I think it's a really important and really helpful challenge to kind of go, you know, we just need to start asking the question. It's not about kind of going, oh, okay, I need to identify the wrongness in everything. Like, although like there's an element of that, but it's not about kind of going, I need to know what I need to, what of the world, I need to be able to identify that all of this needs to be kind of left behind because it's all broken. Listen, the world is broken. There's always going to be, you're always going to be able to answer the sin question, right? But I think what these questions help for us is that idea of just kind of understanding the undercurrent of culture that is always moving, always at work, always shaping our perceptions without even realizing. And I think Anzac Day was, you know, it ended up being the perfect example to kind of start off with, because for so many of us, we didn't there was so much that we didn't know. And then all of a sudden you were like, actually, yeah, this really does shape a lot of things for us. You know, some of the language that came out during the Dawn service was this whole sense of it established Australian national identity.
Yep.
And, you know, I was talking to Julie Chisholm at breakfast. She'd been to the Sutherland Dawn service and she was just kind of talking about, well, like really like Australia had only been like a nation for like a dozen or so years by that point. Like Federation had only happened 1901. Mm-hmm. Am I right? He says in faith.
Sure.
If anyone,
nothing
he doesn't
happened,
even go here.
Nothing
I'm pretty sure we became a federation
at
1901. Anyway, don't quote me on it. But like, so we were so young, mm-hmm. and then to have something so significant happened, it really did shape our national identity, even though like in many ways it was such a blunder of a campaign. Mm-hmm. And yet we now filter so much through the idea of Anzac. Yeah. We went through a pandemic. Well, let's remember the Anzacs, you know. you know, the bushfires, remember the
Anzac spirit.
The Anzacs. Like, and you're absolutely right. I'd never thought about it before, though. Yeah. And then all of a sudden I start hearing it and I'm like, okay.
Well, and that's,
it shapes
and that's
that.
The outcome of asking these sorts of questions. Mm. The outcome is not to identify the evil, right?
Yeah.
It's actually just to open our eyes a little bit and kind of go, there's more going on here than I think. And or that I see on the surface. Mm. And I think that's the valuable piece in it. You know, like I know that, again, coming back to, you know, learning to read the Bible more, more effectively, more efficiently, more deeply, whatever the case is, through learning those skills, it's really helpful.
Yeah.
Because like, you know, I now learn to ask the right sorts of questions about it. There's a deeper appreciation for what I'm reading and experiencing and, you know, in the midst of all of that. And I think the same thing is true of culture.
Yeah.
To be able to kind of go, okay, there's more going on here. And I'm just a little bit more aware of where I might be being swept along or moved along and the messages I'm being told.
Yeah.
And I can actually just assess them a little bit and kind of go, all right, is that what I want to be told? Is that what I want to hold to? Does that line up with my faith?
Yeah.
You know, which means, of course, we do have to do the work to come back to Van Hooser's little, it's not really a formula, but, you know, the cultural agency. We need some theological competence. Like we need to kind of know what we believe in order to kind of make some sense of our world. And so I think, again, so the best way to apply this is just to start.
Yeah.
You know? And I wouldn't start with consumerism or capitalism or, you know, those are just, they're
an
really
ism.
Big, yeah, and isms. But, you know, starting with commercials or starting with things that you see and, you know, finding people who think that way and write really good blogs or articles or books on it where you kind of get someone's insight into what's going on. Like,
yeah.
Or even just studying something like Anzac Day, you know, like part of, you know, my process of doing that is I was teaching a class on it, exegeting Anzac. I was like, okay, well, it's better learn about this, you know, and so kind of off you went and you know, it's amazing what you can learn.
Yeah.
You know, as you're kind of researching something that you're interested in.
Mm. So when you start looking at those questions, you know, we found at Anzac Day, there's some really good things about it that represent the creative good. Then there's some not so great things, war being one of them. How do we then like interact with that without kind of celebrating the war part? Like how do we as Christians?
Yeah.
Is there a certain point where you're like, well, there's too many things that, you know, aren't ideal, but there's like one or two things that represent the creative good, so I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Like, where's that tension kind of sit? And how does the third question like change? Should it change the way we act with it? I don't know. Yeah. I'm a bit confused.
No.
Please explain.
That's a great question though, Jess, because once you start looking at the culture, you start kind of going, oh, okay, now what?
Yeah.
Because at one level, okay, so I watched the BMW ad and I watched it more closely than I had before and look at me go and that's just a fraudulent claim. You're not going to suck me in. Not that it matters. I can't afford one anyway. So, you know, so all good for me. But I guess the question of cultural agency has been answered in a variety of ways. And again, like I mentioned, there's lots of tools to think this through. Another really helpful tool is a paradigm that was established, was designed by H. Richard Niebuhr. He was German background, but an American ethicist. And he came up with five paradigms that he felt that had kind of historic precedent as how Christians had tried to engage with their world. Mm. So it was that whole thing about looking at what's good, what's bad, and then deciding what to do next. And if the bad seriously outweighs the good then, right? And so he said, you know, the one option is for Christians to reject what they experience and just kind of go, we just got to walk away from that. We just cannot be a part of that. So you think about something like an obvious example, pornography. Okay, we could probably say that there's something about the created good in an expression of sexuality and something or other, but really, like, it's mostly busted up.
Yeah.
Right? And so from the perspective, I think, of every Christian, you'd be like, yeah, that's not something that we kind of, you know, we should be more involved in the pornography industry. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you know what I'm saying? So there's kind of an obvious, we just need to get out of
that. We're going to pass on that one.
Yeah. On the other hand, you have the wholesale acceptance of something as this is just really good. Mm. So it's not as prominent anymore, but like the Make Poverty History and all of those sorts of movements. You know, one part of that was started by, I can't remember his name. He's not a Christian though, not a good guy of faith. He was the former lead singer of the Boomtown Rats, if I remember correctly. At any rate, he,
showing his age again.
That's right. I don't like Mondays. Was there big, never mind. speaking to youngins. Bob Geldof.
Very good.
There you go.
As I knew it would eventually come back to me randomly. But he's not someone of faith, but his desire was to eradicate poverty. Mm. And I think as Christians, we can kind of go, hey, all right, you might not be doing this because you want to honor Jesus, but I think we can get on board with this. There's more than enough evidence that this is where the difference that Jesus wants to make, that we can get on board. Mm. But it can lead to like a holus bolus acceptance of the whole thing. We're just on board with Bob Geldof. We don't question anything. Mm. And so both the kind of the complete rejection of things and the complete acceptance of things have implications, right? Mm. You reject one culture and you establish a new one. You completely embrace one and you kind of miss some of the pieces. But those are two strategies, and there's strategies in between where you might take something and you say, well, you know what? There's enough good here, but it's actually, you know, if we could just transpose this to the key of faith, it would be brilliant. Mm. Right? So you think about something like an Anzac Day, where you could say, you know what, all these values of courage and respect and honor and, you know, the ideas behind mateship of caring for others and the egalitarianism of it, you kind of go, oh, there's a bunch here that I think really works with the kingdom. If we just kind of transpose this and start talking about this really in the context of faith, we could probably work with that. So it's a higher way. Or another option is to say that these are two things that will just always be in tension with each other until Jesus comes back. Will there be war until until the Lord returns? Yeah, I think so. I'd like to say that we'll figure ourselves out, but I don't know that that's going to be the case.
Yeah.
You know, so will there be where maybe we just have to hold these things in tension, that there's these military things and there's the things of faith, and we just have to hold them in tension.
Yeah.
We need an army because of the brokenness of our world. While we don't want to necessarily affirm an army because we're not going to have an army in heaven, we need one now. We just kind of hold these things in tension.
Yeah.
Right. Or the fifth paradigm is that there's a space where we can transform a situation. Where you look at a situation and say, yes, there's evidence of the created good. We can see the work that Jesus wants to do. And there's some bustedness that we can work at in this space. Mm. You know, so you think about something like domestic violence. Mm. Surely we can really lean into that space and be actively involved in bringing real change.
Yeah.
Right. You know, so it's similar to pornography in the sense that we kind of go, it's just
bad. We reject the violence.
We reject the violence, like just not on at all. But there's a huge difference between those two examples in terms of our capacity and the effect that we can bring.
Yeah.
Right? It's a family space. To bring about change. Yeah. It's a family space. So that's part of the created good. There's, you know, the marriage relationship and children where like that's part of the created good. There's, you know, like there's something beautiful about those relationships. It's busted up. How do we bring about change in that space? You know, not necessarily the reconciliation.
No. Right? Yeah.
But how do we bring change just to that space? How do we bring, you know, wholeness to people who have been beaten down psychologically, you know, think that they're nothing? Surely there's the work of God in there. We can step into that space. without kind of becoming part of that space.
Yeah.
And so these five kind of answers are, and he points out that those are also partial and incomplete answers, because our society is constantly changing and moving and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So I think, you know, how we respond to certain circumstances needs to be revisited every so often in terms of what our responses are. So I don't know if that gives any clarity, but I think that it's almost like we have to kind of figure out, okay, what kind of brokenness, what kind of good, what kind of transformation is possible, and then kind of pick what's our best response here.
Yeah.
So there will be some things, you know, you think about, you could do the same thing with Netflix, right? Sorry to come back to that.
Oh gosh.
But yeah, there's a bunch of stuff you could look at and go, you know what? I don't think that I should be watching that. Because we tend to be a little bit all in on stuff. We just kind of watch everything. Because it's just a show. Is it just a show? Like, do we ever do the thinking about that? And are there some things that we should reject and say, we're not going to watch that? Some things we kind of go, yep, definitely, that's on my watch list. Are there certain things that we watch in order to kind of have a better feel for things that are taking place in our world? Like, I think that there's a space for us to say that we don't have to just reject everything, but we also probably shouldn't just accept everything. And that there are some things that perhaps can't be transformed this side of heaven. We just have to hold them in tension. And other things where if we could just kind of lift them a little bit into the context of faith, they might be remarkably valuable. So those are five kind of big paradigms. Christ and Culture is the book, written in 1949, I believe. But still excellent, because he focuses on how do you make decisions in a pluralistic context. So he was in many ways way ahead of his time.
Oh, very good.
I mean, I think I'm just kind of just letting it all settle in. I mean, we call it the fourth question because we know it's going to be huge.
Yeah.
I think this whole conversation around how do we as people of faith consider culture, read culture, and then approach culture is a really significant one. And as we kind of, you know, it's the beauty of hindsight, like, but it's the perfect launch for our discipleship cycle, because I think particularly for younger Christians, but really anyone in any stage of life, these are the kinds of questions that we need to be asking ourselves, and we need to be asking them every day. This is not something that we just come in on a Sunday and hear an awesome message about it, as I'm sure you could do, Mark. But, you know, it's something that we need to be questioning, because we're going to find ourselves in different situations, in different contexts regularly. And, you know, it's important for us to think that through. And I think not only just so that we can consider culture, but what that also does is it's constantly bringing faith into our mindset of how am I just living out my faith today? And sometimes it might just be a little internal monologue, thinking through how, you know, the promise of that advertisement kind of impacted me. And other times it'll be, actually, I'm going to make some serious decisions in my life. And, you know, actually I'm not going to engage in that Netflix show, as hard as that might be, or I'm not going to participate in this cultural kind of widely accepted, but, you know, problematic, you know, idea or practice. And like, we need to start asking ourselves that, because if we think that we can just kind of, you know, I don't know, ferry on through faith without considering these things, then I'm not sure if we'll get that depth that discipleship really creates for us.
I think the other thing that's really critical in all this is that you need to do this in community.
Yeah.
You need to do this in community. And I think we need to be, I might put it as, you need to be kind to yourself. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure you guys experience the same thing I do, but, you know, like, you scroll through Facebook or whatever it is, and there's so many causes. And after a while, you're just like, I can't care about that. Like, I realize that people are dying, or that's a really serious illness, or that's a really, like, I get it. I just can't care anymore. Like, I just don't have any capacity for it. And like, our world is full of culture.
Yeah.
You know, and so no one's going to be able to understand all of it and kind of go, oh, yes, you know. And so I think we need to be in community, you know, so that we're learning together. But also in community, so we kind of have a community of faith where we discern what God's asking us to do at this point in time, right? Yeah. Where it's like, you know what? There are lots of really important things right now. These are the things that we're going to focus on. Not because they're the best things or the only things or the most important things, but they're the things that we've discerned God wants us to be at work in, so that we have a little bit of freedom to go, I'll pray for you and your cause. You know, maybe I'll donate to it, but like, I'm just going to focus on what I believe God's calling me into.
Mm.
You know, we're not called, I don't think, to understand everything in our world.
Yeah.
You know, or feel like we're overwhelmed, just like we're, you know, like I think about reading the Bible. There's sections of scripture that I've like, apart from reading them several times, never studied.
Yeah.
And like, I'm not beating myself up about that. Like, you know, depending on how long I live and how many more years I get to preach, you know, like I might get to a few of them, but like, that's fine.
Mm.
You know, there's certain passages that really resonate with me. So you spend a lot of time focusing on them. It's great. So I think it's the same with culture. Look to things that interest you, you know, chat about them with other people, and ask God where he wants you to be involved. And I think that becomes a really helpful way forward. So we don't end up feeling overwhelmed and just kind of going, oh, I suck at, you know, there's one more thing I'm no good at in my faith. It's like, okay, just, you know, calm down, you know, just take some baby steps, you know, read, you know, try to culturally read some ads or television show or read some books that help you see what's happening in the world. And, you know, and
go from there,
just go from there.
Awesome. Well, that sounds like a great first step and a great way to kind of wrap up. Thanks so much, Reid. I really appreciate just the bigger picture, but then also kind of like the practicality of this. I think it'll be really helpful for a lot of us as we kind of seek to live out our discipleship during the week.
Just go forth and apply. That's what I said at the start.
But then you got all flurry with your words. It was beautiful.
I can always go on a while.
Ain't that the truth? Well, thanks so much for joining us, Mike.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Jessica Baker.
Yes.
Where's your head at after that academic assault?
I think I need to practice a little bit. I think I'm still trying to grapple with, you know, and what things you need to start questioning this, and then how does it actually affect you living out. I'm really glad he said the bit at the end about, you know, take care of yourself.
Yeah.
The further we got into it, I was feeling more and more overwhelmed of like, okay, so I'm trying to care for the planet and eat vegetarian. Now I've got to care for this too and this too. And I'm just like, I'm at my max. So picking your things that you think God's really calling you into, and yeah, but still, you know, I mean, it seems ridiculously hard to look at everything with such a critical mindset and not like kind of go with the flow, especially for someone who has been going with the flow for their 25 years of living. To suddenly switch into like that critical thinking, I think will be, you know, hard.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's the great thing about it. It's like, well, just, you know, just practice.
Yeah.
Like it is, it's a skill that we need to learn, but not one that is natural, I don't think. It's not something that's kind of been instilled in us to consider these things. And so, you know, but that's what faith does. It kind of asks you to consider what the world ignores, or maybe even what the world wants you to ignore. So, yeah, I really loved those five responses.
Yeah.
So, like, after we ask those questions of, you know, a situation or an idea within culture, how can we respond to it? It's not just embrace or, you know, run away. And I found that really helpful as well. And so, yeah, I'm kind of, I don't know, maybe Netflix is wrong because it doesn't have ads. And so we need to watch free to air so that we can watch some ads.
I'm already thinking of a few shows that I watch that maybe I'll spend a bit too long trying to think of how it reflects a creative good and just kind of ignore the sin part, which I suppose is why you do it in community, right? Because if you come with like, I've thought about this show and this is what, and they're like, no,
that's a hard
you
pass.
Just like the show, Jess. Like, you can kind of tweak it to suit you.
Gosh, but I really did want him to touch Netflix. I knew he was coming for it. It's because we don't like sports. Well, thank you, my dear friend. I will see you on Sunday.
Yes.
Well, if you want to be a part of the conversation, make sure you're there at one of our services this Sunday, either online or on site, and that you snap the Slido QR code before the sermon to get involved. If you've enjoyed the Big Three podcast today, take the time to give a star rating and be sure to subscribe to stay up to date with all future episodes. Well, thanks for joining us for this week's Big Three and our deep dive into God's invitation for us all. Remember, there's no thought too small, no question too big.